welcome in to another episode of Home Field Advantage. Hope you're all having a great start to your week, wherever you may be listening or watching across our great country or our great land. If you're joining on YouTube, thank you for tuning in there. And as always, if you are listening on audio, wherever you get your podcasts, we appreciate that you're tuning in there as well. My name is Will Highland. It's October 16th, 2023. And it is yet a day after another Patriots loss. Last night, I did my live video. I talked a little bit about what I thought. We're going to get to that in a moment. Crazy stuff happening in Patriots land. And we'll get to more of that in a few minutes. First thing I want to talk about, though, is they're not the only NFL team that lost yesterday. Now, they are the most consequential, in my opinion. And I'll get to that, of course, because at this point, there's not many paths forward. But for the other teams, San Francisco loses to Cleveland. Philadelphia loses to the New York Jets. And suddenly the NFL doesn't look as indomitable. I mean, you still have the 49ers, the Eagles, the Miami Dolphins, the Kansas City Chiefs. Then you got a pack of just average, and then you have the Patriots and Bears. And what I was hoping this year was that the Patriots would be in that pack of average and that they could emerge. Now, stranger things have happened, but for all intents and purposes, they're not going to be joining that group. And so what we've seen in the NFL is sort of a move to the middle. It's actually unlike our political sphere. You know, our political sphere, everyone's moving to the left and right and the middle's being dissolved. In football, everybody's moving to the middle. There's fewer teams that are really, really bad and fewer teams that are really, really elite. And, you know, a team like Denver or New England, who you would think because of coaching or, in Denver's case, a Super Bowl winning quarterback or history or anything else, those teams are falling away from the middle a little bit. And then other teams like Jacksonville or Buffalo, who for most of my lifetime have been average or bad, have moved toward the middle, if not toward the front of the pack even more. But you still have, in this day and age of the NFL right now, Dallas, Philadelphia, San Francisco, of course. Seattle was one of those teams. These guys are all competing. And then on the other hand, you have New England and Denver and Carolina and Chicago and teams that are struggling. So this NFL looks a little bit weird. It's not your usual NFL. And I know it's only through week six, but, you know, we're over a third of the way through the season. You can start looking at how these things are taking shape. It is no longer early, which if you're a Patriots fan, this is bad news. And that's something we're all just going to have to dissect and decompress. So let me try and do that right now for a few minutes. It will, I guess, end up probably being the main topic of conversation again today. But I do want to touch quickly at the end on both college football and Major League Baseball. With the New England Patriots, the answer is pretty simple. In the past, I had been holding out, I don't want to say hope, I was just trying to use logic. You know, when you're 1-3, you know, when you get blown out by Dallas, I thought they were going to be 1-3. You know, I did. You know, I thought the Pats had a tough first four games. You know, honestly, they could have been staring 0-4 in the face if Rodgers was playing for the New York Jets. And, you know, I'm looking around like, yeah, they were really competitive against Philadelphia and Miami, who now are two of the best teams in the league. And then they win an ugly game against the Jets. Those games are always ugly. And then, you know, you get blown out by Dallas, who has an explosive offense and your defense was reeling and Mac had a horrible game. I mean, like, if you remember, I walked away from that particular game and I wasn't immediately alarmed. Then we had the New Orleans debacle, and it was a little bit of a wake-up call. It was like, okay, maybe this team just is bad. Maybe they're not just unlucky or had a hard schedule. Maybe they are bad. And because, again, Mac had another bad game yesterday. But the weirdest thing started to happen, though, is I still started to look around the league after that New Orleans game. I'm like, all right, you're sitting here at 1-4. Okay. You do have a winnable game on your schedule against the Raiders. You also have a home game against a divisional opponent that I'd hope you'd be up for if you were coming off a win across the country. So I was thinking, even though you're 1-4, this league, as I just mentioned a few minutes ago, isn't exactly ripe with people pulling away from you in the playoff hunt. So I thought, if you could beat the Raiders, then you're really right back in it, even though you're 2-4, because this conference isn't amazing. And maybe, depending on how you play against Las Vegas, you might have some confidence to build into that Bills game and that Dolphins game. Not saying you were going to win them, but maybe your season looks a little bit different. And then if I look down at my schedule here, after that, you have Washington and the Colts. So I was like, if you could survive and maybe get out of there like 3-5 and then win those two games and head into your bye at 5-5, depending on how the rest of the conference looks, I was optimistic that the second half of the season could materialize if they were able to get their act together. Here's the problem, and we all know this now. Yesterday, that did not happen. Yesterday, they did what they've done all year, right? Which is the opening drive, they give up points on defense. And this has happened more often than not. If you look back, I believe this happened definitely against Dallas and New Orleans. And I believe either against Miami or Philadelphia. And why that's significant is a lot of people are pointing to the offense. I'm sorry for shaking my camera there. A lot of people are pointing to the offense for their dysfunction, and that's incredibly accurate. I'm not protesting that. But what we're sort of forgetting is the offense not staying on the field has nothing to do with the defense and the opening drive of the game. When you defer, which Bill Belichick loves to do, and he's a defensive guy, the goal is to make a quick stop on defense and get right in there and start on offense. And no matter how dysfunctional your offense is, they're already entering the game with a deficit. All right, so Patriots do what they've done all year, which is they gave up like an 8-minute drive, and sure, it resulted in a field goal, but that's 8 minutes off the clock right off the bat, and your defense is tired. They give up three or four third down conversions on that play. On that possession. So that happens, and then you know you're struggling. It ends up being 10-3. Mac throws a pick. It results in a field goal. Everyone loses their mind. The first half looks ugly, you know. But then in the second half, you know, you put together a couple of drives, you're moving the ball. They had a really good touchdown drive where they were playing the sort of Mac Jones conservative bread and butter offense that they should have been playing all year, because Ramondre Stevenson got hurt and he has been underwhelming, and Zeke Elliott took over and the offense looked different when Zeke Elliott was your featured back. I think if you want to take one offensive takeaway that we didn't already know before, said, I think something's up with Ramondre Stevenson. Yes, we know the offensive line sucks, and that has a lot to do with your running back not being very good, especially a running back like him, who relies a little bit more on that edginess game than somebody like Zeke. But what we saw was that Zeke Elliott was a more productive running back in a quarter and a half than Ramondre Stevenson had been in, you know, 4.5 games. All right. So anyway, they move the ball. They get this touchdown. It's great. And, you know, everyone's complaining about how long it's taking to score. Meanwhile, we had scored a touchdown in like 135 minutes. So, I mean, beggars can't be choosers there. I'm just, you got in the end zone. You're down by three. But then, you know, the defense goes and, you know, they give up another, excuse me, you're down by six or something like that. You know, the defense goes and every time you chip away, you're giving up just a field goal here and a field goal there. Well, that kind of stuff adds up. And what we saw is the Patriots put together another strong touchdown drive. But then they still needed one more possession, right? Because they gave up that extra field goal. And look, it's great that they held Raiders to the field goal. But you still were hoping for, you still needed in that time for that one final drive. Now, a lot of people complaining about the time. I mean, the Pats still had time. The problem is, and here's what nobody's pointing out, which is really frustrating about yesterday's game. You know, it's really hard to dissect a 19-17 game or a 21-17 game, whatever it ended up being. It's really hard to dissect all that. But let me just point out, before that last offensive possession that resulted in safety, you know, you're down, what is it? You're down 19-17. You're trying not to give up any more points to get the ball back. That way you just need a field goal to win it. You would have won it 20-19. Number one thing you do wrong is you have a pass interference penalty called on J.C. Jackson. Now, that's been J.C. Jackson's MO for 5 years, right? And he would be unemployed if your starting corners weren't hurt. So as much as we loved J.C. Jackson a few years ago, that's his MO. He's rusty, he gets handsy, and he draws a lot of penalties. And that's what happened. So you gave up at least 11, 12, 13 yards of field position right there. And then a few more yards, probably 8 or 9 on the ensuing drive that you ultimately stuffed them on, which was good. So you get the ball back, but you've given up 20 yards of field position. Now you're starting inside your 20, if not inside your 15. Then you have a couple procedural penalties that bring you back 10 yards. And so now you've given up almost 30 yards of field position, and Mac is standing inside his own 15, or inside his own 10. You know, and it's like, at that point, like, it was really bleak, right? It's really bleak, right? Then you set up, you get an opportunity, and you have this great play drawn up. Devontae Parker, supposed to be a 50-50 ball guy, right? Haven't seen him catch a 50-50 ball since he's been in New England. But he was brought in, and we're all like, Bill Belichick, and, you know, at the time it was Patricia and Judge. Oh, yeah, he's going to be our 50-50 ball guy. Well, so far I haven't seen him catch one, so that's a little bit of a problem. But so he's supposed to be your 50-50 ball guy. Well, it turns out he can't even catch a 90-10 ball, right, that he has in his fingertips. And actually, like, that's like a 98-2 ball that he has in his hands. Mac probably, you know, Rex Ryan calls him a pea shooter. A lot of people, you know, don't like his arm. He put that ball where pretty much only Devontae Parker could get it. He was heading toward the sideline. He would have caught it, gone out of bounds. You would have been probably about the Raiders' 45-yard line. Then you would have needed, conceivably in a dome, probably about 10 more yards with still plays under your belt. And I believe the 2-minute warning still. Or at least with a minute and change to get those 10 yards and set up for a game-winning field goal. It would have been only the second time in Jones's career that he executed a game-winning drive, and the entire conversation with this team would have, I think, changed a little bit in that we would no longer be calling for the heads of people for one more week. Now, they're facing rock bottom. All because Devontae Parker, who's supposed to be a 50-50 ball guy, did not catch a 98-2 ball. Now, I'll be clear. That's not the reason you lost the game. That's the reason the final sequence happened the way that it did, right? Because then you get stood up and now you're desperate. I mean, you're desperate. It's 3rd and 15 in your own end zone. And, you know, Mac takes the safety on fourth, on third down. I mean, look, you know, here's the thing. Everyone yelling at Mac to throw the ball away. Well, okay, there was nobody open. And if you think the check down was open, if he tries to get rid of that ball over all those defensive linemen that were standing in his face with their hands up, some of them, you know, that ball's going to either get deflected, it's going to be fumbled, it's going to be strip sacked, and you're all going to be yelling at him for getting strip sacked. Second thing that could have happened is he may not have got the ball beyond the line of scrimmage if he tried that. All right. And he was still inside the pocket. So that's intentional grounding in the end zone. That's already a safety. All right. So, you know, understanding the rules of football and the situations of football is probably the first thing you need to understand in order to critique a particular situation. So, I mean, it was still a really bad sequence. And, you know, Mac has to find ways as the leader of the offense at the quarterback to get himself out of those situations. He was checking out of the blitz a lot. And that's not the reason you lost the game. The Parker catch and the safety, that's not the sole reason. I'm a coach. I'm a firm believer. There's more than one play that loses a game. Usually it's a handful of plays. You know, you overcame his first half turnover. You hadn't done that in the past couple of weeks. You did that. He did not throw a pick six today, right? Like, you know, like he may have given up a safety, but he did not throw a pick six today, all right? So as hard as it is to defend Mac Jones lately, like, you look at that game, like, he brought you back. He brought you back into the game with two big touchdown drives. Like, not quite sure, despite the bad first half, you know, what else you needed. I mean, you needed him to put the ball in somebody's hands in the fourth quarter. He did that. The receiver dropped it. And in the words of Gisele Bündchen, my husband cannot throw and catch the ball. So, I don't know. That's just my take on the Raiders game. So, now is where you go next. Running short on time here, so I'm going to make this really fast because I still want to touch on the ALCS and college football for a brief second. Where do you go from here? Last week I mentioned three paths you can go forward. You could still ride out the season. You could still completely tank. And you could still do the Nick Foles option. At this point, I don't think we saw yesterday. You know, I don't think you're going to do the veteran QB option somewhere else. I think elevating Malik Cunningham is a interesting decision. There's a lot of other factors that go into this. But I mean, you're now staring 1-7 in the face. And if that happens and through your first half of the season, you have one win, I think it's going to be increasingly hard to keep the coach, around at this point. I mean, I'm not saying fire Bill, but it's going to be increasingly hard to defend that. And same thing with the quarterback. All right, quickly. ALCS, Rangers, Astros, Battle of Texas, great opportunity. And good old-fashioned pitcher's duel between Jordan Montgomery and Justin Verlander. Rangers end up scraping across a couple of runs. They win 2-0. Great pitcher's duel, great start to that series. I think the Rangers, if they can win, they're sort of America's team in baseball right now. Or at least everybody outside of, you know, Pennsylvania, Eastern Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware. But, you know, elsewhere in the ALCS, you have an opportunity for the Astros to get back there for, I don't know, like a sixth time in 8 years or something like that. Like, I'm guessing. I don't have the numbers right in front of me. If I thought about it, they made it in 17, 19, 17, 19, 21. 22. So that would be 6 times in 7 years or so. No, that would be the 6 and 8. Yeah, I was right. So, or 5 and 8, something. Okay, we're not going to do math at 7:30 in the morning. But there, you know, there would be an opportunity there for them to really establish themselves even further as a multi-pronged dynasty, a lot like what we saw with the Patriots in the NFL or recently, or with the San Francisco Giants in baseball, right? San Francisco Giants winning 3 World Series with partially different teams each time. So that would be really interesting to see in baseball. But I think America wants the Texas Rangers to be there. alongside whoever the National League recipient is, I think a lot of people are rooting for Philly. All right, in college football, some big upsets. Maybe not upsets, but some big results. I'm pulling up the scores here so I don't forget all of them. But you had a situation where it began with a ranked matchup of USC and Notre Dame. And by that, I don't mean the actual games began with that. That one was on pretty late, but sort of the drama and intrigue, in my opinion, and the most interesting begins with Notre Dame beating USC 48-20. How'd Caleb Williams look, by the way? That's a topic for another show. You also have Oregon State knocking off UCLA in another ranked matchup. Big news there. Further on, Tennessee taking care of Texas A&M. A lot of people think Jimbo's on the hot seat over there in College Station. Then you had Alabama eking out a win over Arkansas at home. Penn State absolutely obliterating UMass. Ohio State obliterating Purdue. Michigan obliterating Indiana, right? So those are all the games that sort of went the way everybody thought. Then you had Oregon and Washington wins 36-33 with a late field goal, which is huge for them. That's a huge rivalry. And more importantly, I think that's going to have huge playoff implications down the road. And then lastly, Oklahoma State upsetting Kansas 39-32 and Arizona upsetting Washington State. So there were quite a few upsets. There were quite a few dramatic endings, and there were quite a few blowouts, which is a par weekend in college football, except the fact that, you know, Notre Dame's a very confusing team. USC, Colorado as well, got absolutely shanked. I forget who beat that. I don't even remember. I'm going to have to look that up, but story for another day. But I think in college football, you have more of what you have in the NFL, which is a few very elite teams, a lot of good teams, and some teams that are a little bit of pretenders. And I think as the season goes on, more of those are going to get hashed out. I just think for college football's sake, they are in need of oxygen when it comes to having an expanded playoff and more teams being involved. All right. And speaking of being more involved, please follow us on Instagram wherever you get your podcast. Follow us on Instagram for all of our social content and subscribe to us wherever you get your podcast. That would be great. That's going to do it for this episode of Home Field Advantage. Hope you tune in on Thursday. We'll talk about whatever happens between now and then. Surely be a lot in the next few days. But yes, as I said, in the meantime, subscribe and follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts. We would appreciate that. And until then, my name is Will Hyland, and you've been listening and watching Home Field Advantage. If you liked this podcast, please subscribe on your favorite provider, including Spotify, Apple, Google, and Stitcher. You can also listen to Home Field Advantage and Filling Up wherever you listen to podcasts. Home Field Advantage is now expanding to 2 days a week, Monday and Thursday. So we hope you all check us out there and follow us at Home Field Pod. Every Sportland USA program is an independent program, and the opinions expressed on them do not reflect those of any other company, outlet, person, or entity.